All right, so you can start opening up to Luke chapter 5. We're going to be finishing up with the last part of 5 and just jumping into Luke chapter 6. And we are in our Unveiling of the Messiah series. Now, in this passage, we're looking at Jesus as he engages with the Pharisees in several different ways. Talking about fasting and praying. But as he's doing that, he's engaging with the joy and rest and salvation. And if we're honest, those are some of the things that we desire most. Now, I desire joy. I like to find and experience joy. And I also like rest. It's hard to come by these days. 5 kids, take it out of you. But if we're honest, most of us are also looking to be saved from something. We're looking to be saved from something. And as we look around in our earthly context, in our worldly culture, it's hard to find these things. And we try hard. But I'm going to need your help now, okay? What are some things that we do? We're write down here, okay? What are some things that we do? We're writing on a piece of paper. I was trying to get real creative and bring a bunch of things here, but then I realized I had to bring like 6 other bags for the kids' stuff. And so I don't want to bring them. I'm going to bring paper. So you're going to help me with this. But what do we do to find joy? What are some things that you do to find joy? Just shout it out, okay? Give me something, somebody. Jaden, what do you do to find joy? What? Music. So you like music. Jaden likes music. Yeah, that's a good thing. Let's do music. And, you know, a lot of us find joy in music. But then we have to buy music, right? We have to buy music. We have to buy it. We have to go look for it. Sometimes that's kind of hard. We don't find it. And, you know, music is good, but then sometimes it doesn't always leave you with everything you want. And it becomes maybe somewhat of a burden. What else? What else? What's something else that you do to find joy? What's something else?
Food.
Food, oh man, I'm all about food. I want to go home and smoke some steak. Food, and, you know, food is good. You gotta buy it, again. That takes a little bit of money. And gotta cook it. Yeah, you gotta cook that. Takes a little bit of work. And you know what the worst thing about food is? You know what? When you clean it up, it's after you've already finished eating it. All of the joy is gone, and now you have to clean it up. And it's like, that steak that I just ate that was so good, everybody, and now it's gone. And it leaves you dissatisfied. Okay, so that starts to fill up. But what else? We're still in food. So what's the other thing? What? Technology, oh, and we like our phones and Facebook. But then, you know what? My phone's dying. I gotta get a new phone, which again, you have to buy. And, you know, when you start to sit on your phone and Facebook all the time, you start to, like, your soul starts to get zapped out of your face. And, you know, it's not meeting my needs. It's actually becoming kind of more of a burden. It's about rest. We like rest, right? I like to sleep. I like to sit down and rest. I'm going to go home and we'll eat lunch and then I'm going to sit down on the couch and I will be out cold, sitting down, dreaming and drooling. It happens every Sunday afternoon until one of my kids go, my jeans up there nodding. But we like rest. But what are some things that we do to find rest? What's the thing we do to find rest? Anybody? Sleep. Sleep is always something we want to do, but there's never enough of it. There's not enough. We miss out on life when we're sleeping, and I always wake up tired. I hate waking up, but I always wake up tired, and it never fills me quite as much as it should. What are some other things? What's some other things that I like to do? Coffee, oh man, I'm a big coffee person, more than I ever should be. But then again, we run out of it, cost money. You know, you get that last cup. The last cup, you know, you can't have any more that day, and it's just like, oh, hours. I'm out of the coffee, it doesn't fully be my rest as well. We all like vacations, I like good vacations, and but then it takes time to plan it, it takes time, and money, and it ends, and you wait way too much, and then you're still tired at the end. What about salvation? What do you think? What do you have to do? What do you like to do to rest? You take naps anymore? You sleep in. Sometimes you play video games. Video games? You play video games? But what are some things we feel we need to be saved from? Sometimes I need to be saved from boredom. I need to be saved from boredom. That takes a lot of work. I need to be saved from insignificance. I want to be significant in this life, and so I do all of these things to be significant, to make a difference. We need to be saved from insignificance. I need to be saved from hardship. Our life is full of hardship. A lot of you are in some of those seasons right now. We need to be saved from our sin. And you know what happens is we see all of these things that we need. And we see all these areas of joy and rest and salvation that we're like, we need those things. And we try, we fill our bag with lots of things that we think will give us that joy, that we think will provide us with that rest. We know it every time outside of Jesus. It actually doesn't ultimately fulfill. And you know what those become is they actually become burdens. Because they require more and more and more. We keep trying this and that, and every time it doesn't mean it, every time it doesn't mean it, every time it doesn't mean it, and we end up walking with more and more and more burdens because what we really need is not being met. And we open up and go to Luke chapter 5. Jesus, I'm not going to preach, I'm going to sing all day. Jesus is engaging with the Pharisees. You see, the Pharisees were religious leaders. They had been given God's law. They had been given God's word. And they were trying to use it to understand how to live their life. But instead of using it well, they just kept on adding to it and adding to it. And more and more burdens got piled on, and nobody could really get what they actually needed. You see, we need to be trading in our burdens. We need to be trading in our burdens for the joy and rest and salvation that's only found in Jesus. We need to be trading in our burdens for the joy and rest that can only be found in Jesus. And that's exactly what Jesus is trying to teach the Pharisees this morning as we open up. And so, once you open up your Bibles to Luke chapter 5, and we're going to start in verse 33. It says, and they said to him, the disciples of John fast often and offer prayers, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours eat and drink. And Jesus said to them, can you make a wedding guest fast while the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and they will fast in those days. So the first thing that we start to see is that Jesus is the one who brings new joy. Jesus is the one that brings new joy. And it starts out right there, it says, and they. And so what he's talking about, the author of Luke, which is Luke, what Luke is talking about there is he's referring back to what just happened in the previous section, where Jesus and his disciples went out and hung out with Levi, or better known as Matthew. Matthew was a sinner and a tax collector. And they went to his house to have dinner, and they hung out with him. And the Pharisees, they didn't do that. You know, and while Jesus' disciples were eating and drinking and having a good time, the followers of John the Baptist, the followers of the Pharisees, who this is referring to, it's kind of a group of these guys that are coming together to ask Jesus this. They're saying, well, Jesus, while your guys are hanging out with Matthew over here, we're fasting and praying. What's the deal? Come on, Jesus, what's going on? And see, and there's a fasting is a little bit different. Fasting means abstaining from food or eating. And they would fast they would, as a way of leading to prayer, which is a good thing. We see that in the New Testament. Okay? So if you're fasting from food or from technology or you know music or whatever to lead us into prayer. But In the Old Testament, during this time, not the Old Testament, during Jesus' time, it was commanded only at the Day of Atonement. So the one day that they would go into the temple and have all of their sins forgiven, they would fast that day. That was the only day that it was commanded. But it became a practice where they would do it actually twice a week. And then the way they would do it is they would fast in a way where everybody would see that they were mourning and in sadness because they were fasting. I'm just going to put sackcloth. We talked about sackcloth about 2 months ago and talked about how nasty it would be to put sackcloth on. They would put sackcloth on and they would be in sadness and mourning and they would be mourning over their sins and they'd be, woe is me, I'm fasting. You see, what it was a holy religious thing to show how holy you really were. It was an extra burden that they were putting on themselves. And they really weren't coming before God. They were just trying to show off their holiness. And so Jesus, you know, we're fasting and mourning. We're showing our sores and you're sitting here having a joyous time eating and celebrating. And Jesus responds to them and says, can you make a wedding guest fast while the bridegroom is with him? You see, in their time, weddings weren't just a day long. So, you know, I like a wedding, I have a good wedding, I like going to weddings, I like the fact that I can go hang out, and I like the fact that I can go home and go to bed and rest. But their weddings were a week long, and it was, you know, they wouldn't go out to a honeymoon, but they would just have all their friends over, and they would come and eat and drink, and it was just a party and a good time, and it was just, they would take forever just hanging out and having a good time. It was a grand celebration with great joy, and the wedding guests that were closest into the bridegroom were basically guests of honor that were celebrating this joyous moment. And there was actually laws at that time in the Pharisaical laws that when you were a wedding guest, you didn't have to fast because it was a time of celebration and fasting was a time of mourning. And what Jesus is telling us, listen, while I'm here, this is a time of celebration and joy. This is a time of festivity because I am here. And while I am here, it's not a time to be mournful or sorrowful. It's a time to celebrate because God Himself is here. He says that there's going to come a time, and He's referring to His death, when He's going to go and He's going to be taken away and He's going to die, and the disciples really will fast and mourn for the right reasons because Jesus is gone. But while Jesus is here, it's supposed to be a time of joy. Because that's what He brings. Jesus brings a joy. He goes on and He kind of backs this up a few more ways. And He's bringing a new type of joy. Not something from the old, but something from the new. In verse 36, it says He also told them a parable. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on the old garment. If he does, he will tear the new piece from, or he will tear the new, and the piece of the new will not match the old. And he was kind of talking about like a garment or shirt you would put on. And every time they would put these on, as they would wash them and things like that, they would shrink a little bit. And, you know, a lot of times, you ever paint your house? You paint your room. And then, you know, 6 months later, one of your boys throws a frisbee into one of the walls or puts a big hole in it. So then, this never happens in my house. And then you go and you plaster it, and then you go and get the same paint and put the same paint over it. It doesn't match! Why? Because it sat, one paint has sat on the wall for a while, the next paint has sat in the can for a while, and it doesn't match. It's the same idea here with this type of cloth. You say, well, this cloth will start to wear out. You've been wearing this on and washing it and things like that. And so you will cut a new piece of cloth and put it on the old piece of cloth that's not going to match. But not only that, now it's not going to match, but the new piece of cloth is going to have a hole in it. So this doesn't make sense anyway whatsoever. The new doesn't go with the old. The new doesn't go with the old. And he keeps on this in verse 37. It says, no one puts new wine, Chad, you go and explain this wine stuff. You know, and no one puts new wine into an old wineskin. If he does, the new wine will burst the wineskin and it will be spilled and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into old or new wineskins or fresh wineskins. So, you know, a wineskin was taken from, like a goat, they would take it off, and it would be partially tanned. So they would kind of, you know, wear it down and make it sort of partially leather, but they wouldn't do it fully, they would still leave a little bit, so it has some elasticity. So when you would put the new wine into the wineskin, as it would continue to ferment, continue to bubble up, it would stretch. And it would allow it to stretch so that it wouldn't burst. And that would preserve the wine, allow it to be stored for a longer period of time. But if you would take new wine and put it into a wineskin that already been used and already been stretched, the moment that it continues to ferment and give off gases, Mike thinks it's cool. But you know, and then you would waste all of this wine and you would blow up a wineskin. You don't mix the new with the old. You see, what Jesus is trying to tell these people as they're asking about fasting, he said, listen, I am bringing a new joy, and it doesn't fit your old understanding. It doesn't fit in the old way of life. God gave you this way of life, but I am coming to save you from that. I gave you the Old Testament to teach you about me, but also to show me how much you needed me. I am fulfilling that with something new, which is Jesus himself. And he finishes in verse 39, it says, no one after drinking old wine desires new. For he says, the old is good. That's kind of a parable. Basically meaning, you know, if you just drink old wine, and a lot of people are like, oh, the old is good enough. I don't need the new. The old is good enough. I don't need to try the new thing. And Jesus said, you're missing out. Because the old way, the old judicial system just led to more and more burdens. It revealed your sin. And it showed you your need of God, but it also showed the nation of Israel that they really couldn't meet all of the needs. And you know what happened? It ended up being burdens. It ended up being burdens. And Jesus said, I am bringing a new joy. I am the bridegroom that you are going to come and celebrate with. I am bringing something new. You know, as Christians, we should be living a joyful life. We should be living a joy-filled life. But so often, we get so caught up in the burdens of this earthly life that we lose our joy. The burdens of work. The burdens of keeping our family together. The burdens of our neighbors, the burdens of whatever trial or tribulation that God has us going through. We get so caught up with our earthly burdens that we forget about the new joy that Jesus has brought. You see, we stop being God's wedding guests and we start just looking around for sackcloth and fasting because we want to mourn about our current situation. Listen, when Jesus came, he was able to bring an endless joy because when he died on the cross, when he took our place, he paid for our sin. And what happened was at the moment, at the foot of the cross, we no longer have to work or earn that joy. The moment that Christ said, it is done, everything was paid for. And the joy that we have, we no longer work for it because Christ already purchased it. And our joy doesn't come from knowing, I get to go home and take a nap today. No, I'm going to wake up from that nap, that joy's going to be gone. I guess if I wake up from the nap, I'm playing Xbox. But I have the joy of heaven coming. I have the joy of heaven coming. And it doesn't matter the trials and tribulations I have. God is going to get me through those moments. And heaven's coming where every tear will be wiped away. Every desire that we have a fullness that is coming. I don't longer have to carry my burdens and try to find my joy because Jesus already paid for it. He is bringing something new. We have to trade in our old burdens that we used to find joy for a new joy that comes from Jesus. And even while we're here, God promises that He will give us everything that we need. He will get us through every day until He comes back. And we don't have to work for that. Christ did that. And that's a joy that can only come from Him. Two, Jesus is our rest. Look at verse 1, starting in chapter 6. It says, on that Sabbath, while He was going through the grain fields, His disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hand. But some of the Pharisees said, why are you doing this? It is not lawful for you to do on the Sabbath. And Jesus replied, Jesus answered them, have you not heard what David did when he was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus is our rest. Now, Luke goes from talking about fasting to talking about the Sabbath. Talking about the Sabbath, and Jesus is showing His authority over a lot of these Old Testament laws that God had given His people. And the very first thing that we see in the next two sections in chapter 6, or the first two sections of chapter 6, is on the Sabbath, and then later on that Sabbath. And Luke is trying to show us something. The Sabbath was a very important day. It actually has its grounding all the way back in creation. Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3 says, and on the seventh day, God finished His work that He had done, and He rested on the seventh day from all the work that He had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because of God rested from all of His work that He had done in creation. But then later on in Exodus 20, when God is handing out the Ten Commandments, He stuffs them right back in there. He says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, for your sons and your daughter and your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is with you or within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. This Sabbath day was a big deal. The Sabbath day was a day that set the people of the Jewish people apart from the rest of the world. You know, the rest of the world would continue to work and 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 work, and they would try to get all of this and try to get all of that, and they would. And they did all of these things, but God commanded creation from the very beginning of time, and then His people in Exodus 20, to have a Sabbath rest. And anybody who is in your household and in your gates, even in your donkeys and your cattle, shall have the Sabbath rest. And the idea of a Sabbath, this is something that the New Testament American church doesn't do quite so well, and we need to learn to do a little bit better. But the idea of the Sabbath is a day where we rest in the Lord. A day where they would rest in the Lord. It was a day where they had a trust that God would take care of all of their needs. You know, a lot of times they were farmers and agriculturalists, and you know, there were times storms and things would come, and they would just have to trust God to provide the day that they would take off, the Saturday that they would take off. But it was a day where they would rest from their work, but it was also a day where they would remember the faithfulness of God. Where they would remember the work that God had done in them, where they would set aside all of these things to find rest in God. And it was a very important day, as repeated multiple times. Because what the Pharisees did is they took the Sabbath rest, they took that day, and they then wrote a whole other book on all of the laws that people had to do to keep the Sabbath holy. Okay, they couldn't get up and walk. They, like, literally, you couldn't take more than like 8,000 steps or something like that. Like, you could not take more than this. You had to count. So they didn't have all of their app counters and their step counters. They literally charted every step. You couldn't do any work for any type of food. Everything you ate had to be prepared the day before. And you know what they did? They took a day of rest and added laws to it. They took a day that was supposed to be free of burdens and added burdens to it. They took the word of God and made it the word of man. And they didn't get it right. And Jesus is confronting this passage. You know, Jesus and the disciples are walking through the grain fields, probably counting their steps. They would go up to this grain field and they would pluck these things and rub them in their hands and then eat. It's probably a corn or some sort of wheat that they were eating. And this was actually legal or allowed. The farmers were told not to harvest grain at the very edge of the field so people could go and eat while they were journeying and walking. But the Pharisees saw this and were like, no, you're breaking the rules. You can't harvest on the Sabbath. You're harvesting. You can't work for your dinner. You're rubbing it and cracking it open. Jesus says, no, you've actually got this wrong. You actually have the Old Testament. You have the stories of David, which gives you an understanding of how to understand these laws, and you didn't use it. He says, have you not read? It's almost the mocking tone, like, you know this. You know the stories of David. He was one of the people you hold in such high esteem. Have you not read what David did when he was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took the bread of the presence. And the bread of the presence was a bread that was every couple of days changed in and out. And there were 12 loaves of the bread of the presence that were offered on the altar before God. It was a way of saying, God, here we go, basically, here's your meal and a remembrance to God. And after the days were over, the priests weren't allowed to eat those. That was one of the portions that the priests were allowed to eat, but only the priests. They were the only ones allowed to eat that according to the ceremonial laws. But here in Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 21, David goes in there with his men. He's fleeing from Saul. And he runs in and he goes to the priest of Ahimelech, and he asks for the bread. And this priest, the one who's called to uphold God's ceremonial law, instead of rejecting David because he saw how David was famished and that his people were hungry, said, are you clean? He says, yeah, we are. We're ceremonially clean. And the priest gave him the bread. He gave him the bread. The priest broke the ceremonial law. You see, what Jesus is doing is he's using this to set a precedent. Listen, these laws, they are meant to keep us ceremonial clean, but they're not meant to keep us from showing mercy. They're not meant to keep us from loving other people. How you apply the laws that I've given you, you've got it wrong. You've got it wrong. In fact, you've turned something that's supposed to be rest into something that's full of burdens. And in verse 5, Jesus makes one of the greatest claims of all time. Is the Son of Man, it's the term that he uses to refer to himself as the Messiah when he's revealing himself as the Messiah. He says, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. You see, the Pharisees understood that the Sabbath was given to them by God himself, both at the beginning of creation and in the Ten Commandments. They understood that this was from the very words of God. And when Jesus said that he was Lord of the Sabbath, he was claiming to be God. And you say, I have jurisdiction over this. You see, you don't understand this, but I gave this law. I know what it's here for. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And so Jesus is telling them, he's not just Lord of the Sabbath, but ultimately, nobody else is actually going to be able to find a Sabbath rest without Jesus. The Pharisees themselves had the Old Testament law. God gave them everything they needed to know about their own sin, about what they needed to do to have a relationship with God. They had everything that we could earthly want. And then he says the application of it. They took what was supposed to provide rest and created burdens. You see, outside of Jesus, that's exactly what we do. We take the very things of God that are called and used to create rest, and we create ways. When Jesus says that I am Lord of the Sabbath, he's not only claiming authority over the Sabbath, but he's also letting us know that he is the only one that we can find real rest in. Hebrews 4, 9, 10, write this down and go back and study it for yourself later this week. Don't take my word for it. Go read it and get your face in this book. But it tells us that the Sabbath rest is a rest from works, but not just normal labor. It is a rest from labor works, but what Jesus is talking about here, it's also a rest from the works for salvation. It's a rest from the work that's going to get us into heaven, because you and I really can't work enough. We can't earn our right into heaven. And every time we try to meet the need that only Jesus can meet, the presence of God can meet, all we do is keep burdens on us because we can't do it. And really, we can never find rest. And what Jesus is saying is, listen, I am the Sabbath rest that you want, because that moment when Christ died on the cross, when Christ paid for our sins, when Christ rose from the grave, he took every burden that we have and paid for it. Every work that we've ever tried to do to please God on our own, every wrong thing that we've done to sin against God, to condemn us to hell, God paid for it. You see, it's no longer a thing of works. It's a thing of Jesus. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. The rest that we long for can only be found in Jesus. I'm going to tell you what. There's a lot of you tomorrow morning where you're going to wake up and you are still going to be in the same trial and tribulation that you were in the day before. You are still going to be struggling, trying to figure out how to take your next step. But here's the thing. God has it figured out already. God has it figured out already. And you want to know what? God is going to get you through that day, and the next day, and the next day. You don't have to work to get through those days. You have to rest in God. Why? Because in the end, we're going to heaven if you're a follower of Jesus because of the work of Jesus. God allows us to hit rock bottom sometimes, but he allows us to do that just so that we can need God more and find rest in God more. And that doesn't mean that we don't work hard at knowing God more. Because we should. When you give your life to Jesus and you get to that point where you need Jesus, it is a life where you are continually learning about who Jesus is and what God has done to reveal in you the more joy and the greater dependence that we need on God. But ultimately, your eternity is fixed. You don't need to see through the next problem. You just need to see Jesus. Because he is the rest that your soul longs for. And even getting on the other side of the trial, that's not going to do it. That's why we need Jesus in that place. Because he is our rest. And then lastly, Jesus closes the section off on another Sabbath healing. And Jesus shows us that he came to heal and to save. In verse 6, this is on another Sabbath. He entered the synagogue and was teaching a man, was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he said, he rose and stood there, and Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save a life or to destroy it?" And looking around at them all, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so. His hand was restored, but they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. So he picks up here another Sabbath story, trying to make his point showing that Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, and tying into the previous story. It says that Jesus entered a synagogue and started teaching. This is his normal pattern. He would go in and teach on the kingdom of God. And while he was there, there was a man, and he gives us a very, very intimate description of it. It was his right hand that was withered. It was a doctor, giving those doctor details. But then he also tells us that the Pharisees were watching. They were watching Jesus. They wanted to trap Jesus. I'm not going to lie. Every time I read through this story, all I can think about is that little squid head in the Star Wars. It's a trap! Right? And that's all. Every time I think of that's what they're trying to do. A bunch of squid heads trying to trap Jesus. Yeah, right? Is that a governor? What'd you say? Which one is it? What's his name? Admiral, that's all I can think about. But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to trap Jesus. They don't care about the guy with the withered hands. They just want to catch Jesus. And Jesus understands and knows their thoughts. He is God. And so he deals with it right then and there. And he tells the man, stand up. Fun says this guy walks forward. As he's walking forward, Jesus looks up and addresses the Pharisees. Is this lawful according to your laws? According to the laws that are supposed to protect the Sabbath? Is it lawful to do good or to do harm? You see, at that time, you were only allowed to give out medical help on the Sabbath if it was in dire need. If they were about to die, you could give out medical help. But if you broke your arm, well, just stay there. We'll get you to sundown. Alright? Then when Jesus says, no, is it lawful to do good or to do harm? He's basically telling him, listen, if you have the ability to do good, if you have the ability to show mercy, to show loving kindness, and you withhold it, that is doing harm. It's not neutral, it's harmful. If you don't do the things that you can do in that moment, it is harmful if you withhold. He then goes even one step farther. He says, is it good to save a life or to destroy it? It's not just doing good and harm, to save or to destroy. And then Jesus has the man come over and tells the man, stretch out your hand. Stretch out your hand. And I said, God, can you just imagine this? Tells him to stretch out your hand, and all of a sudden, it's restored. It's restored. Here, Isabel, Charlotte, can you come up here? Can you help me out? Come on, come on, Charlotte. Okay, come here. Come on, Charlotte. This is Charlotte. Never knew Charlotte. Round of applause. So I don't have a mic for you, so you're just going to yell real loud. How, you know how tall you are? No, I don't. You're like, how tall are you? 3 feet? Can I just get there? You know, so if I said Charlotte, I want you to grow another foot in. I want you to be as tall as I am. Got it? And I said, Charlotte, grow. And Charlotte would be like, what do we do? Like, our minds would be blown. Why would your mind be blown? It'd be blown. And he goes, good job, Charlotte. Good job. But like, if something that would happen, well done, Charlotte. But if something like that would happen, our mind would be blown. We'd be like, what on earth? Because this is before modern medicine. This guy had a hand that was withered, and he couldn't use it. And then Jesus said, stretch out. And the guy stretched out, and it was new again. It was fully restored. They should have jumped up and started worshiping God. But they got angry. Furious. To the point where they started to plot against Jesus, to plot for his death, because he healed the guy on the Sabbath. And we look at this story, and we read this, and our minds should be blown. Like, that should be like, no way. No way. We're left to our own self. left in our own burdens, we're actually end up being just like these guys. If we try to do it on our own instead of becoming more loving and caring because of our sin, we just become harmful and angry. And even though they had what they needed to understand of how to have a relationship with God, they couldn't do it. And in fact, it led them to be enemies of God. Because that's what our burdens do. We can't fix our needs. And when we try, instead of becoming more like God, we become distant from God. That's what Jesus came to heal and to save. See, that's exactly what Jesus did when he healed this guy. He healed and he saved him. You know, in this instance, it was a physical healing. But God came for a spiritual healing as well. A spiritual salvation to die for the greatest need that you and I have, which is our sin. And that's what Jesus came to do. Jesus came to save and to heal because we can't do it on our own because our burdens just keep us from God. And even when we try to do the right things and try just like the Pharisees were doing, we end up, instead of unloading our burdens, we end up putting more burdens in. This is what Jesus is saying in this passage, is I am bringing something. I am bringing the fullness of joy because it's me. The perfect and holy God is coming to be with us, to have a relationship with us. And every joy that we've been trying to use to fill our life is going to be washed away and we can put it at the foot of the cross. Every burden that we have to find rest in, Jesus says, listen, I'm that rest. Everything that you've done to try to find it is just going to create more burdens. I am your Sabbath. I am Lord of the Sabbath. And I am your salvation. I have come to heal and save your soul. And you're heaven bound. You see, what Jesus is doing, what Jesus is teaching them is that this isn't something that we work for. This isn't something that we can just do. It's something that we have to accept. Something that Christ has already done. When we go to the foot of the cross, we say, God, I have nothing. But you have everything. Jesus wants to take your burdens. He wants you to find rest. And some of you might be seeing this, but you may have never have given your life over to the Lord Jesus Christ, and you feel like you are walking around full of burdens, and you've tried all of these things to find joy. You've tried all of these things to find rest. You're trying to be saved from this or from that. It's not working. You need Jesus. He's the only thing that can fill your soul. He's the only thing that can set your eternity in heaven where every need will be met. And every tear wiped away. Have you found it? If not, you need Jesus. We're Christian. Some of us have been Christians for a long time. Some of us have put our burdens at the foot of the cross and we're still walking this life. But do you live like it? Do you live like you have joy because Jesus is taking your burdens? Do you rest like Jesus has already completed the work that you need to complete? Do you trust Jesus for your salvation? Or 2 Peter 1, 3 through 4 gives us a great picture of what this looks like. You just write this one down, 2 Peter 1, 3 through 4, and go back and study this all week long. It says, His divine power has been granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. He has granted us all things that we need to pertain to life and godliness. How? Through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence. To saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. We continually have to go back to knowing Jesus. Verse 4, by which He has granted to us the precious and very great promises, the promise of heaven, the the promise of eternity with Him, the promise that we can get through every day, not because of what we can do, not because of the joy I can find, not because of how I do rest, but because of Jesus' work, His completed work. So that through them we might become partakers of divine nature, having escaped the corruption of this world. Christian, you need to learn to drink deeply from the well of Jesus. We need to learn in our Bibles, it's not just a checklist, but it's coming before the throne of God, learning about the one who gave it all on our behalf, the one who says, give me your burdens and I will give you joy. Give me your burdens and I will give you rest. When we come daily before God's word, it's a feast. Drinking deeply from the love of Jesus. And our prayer time is not just a wants list. God does want to hear those things, but it's spending time with the Lord, communing with the God of all creation, believing that He has died for us and saved us. And even in our worst, He provides us the best. And even in our hardest times, He's given us a foundation to get us through. In your conversations, Jesus needs to be a healthy part of your conversation. When you're talking about the joy that He has given you, when you're talking about the rest that He has given you, when you're talking about the heaven that's coming, you want to be an attractive Christian and drink deeply from the well of Jesus. And in your belief in God's promises. Christian, this week I would encourage you. Church, I would encourage you. Put your burdens at the foot of the cross. Find joy in Jesus. Long for heaven. Find rest in the power that God's going to give you to get to that day. Find rest in the understanding that your salvation is through God alone. And He's got that. And no matter what is going on, you will see Jesus in heaven. Why? Because He came to heal and to save.